Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Good. Now we're not on. That is just our voice telling us that we have airtime now, but we're not on the air. It's just us now. Okay.
All right.
I want to thank you for being on. And as Stuart said, what I'm going to be saying is, Carol, can you, say this? George, can you know? So that I'll say your name before I ask you the question. So that's going to make it very easy for the two of you to answer. All right.
Good.
Sure.
Sure. Now let me tell you why I wanted you on and what I want to bring out here. One of the things that we talk about a lot is contribution. All kinds, contributing your time, your efforts, your money, for lifelong engagement and purpose, and really making a difference. And one of our pet peeves is, we say this, the world doesn't expect anything of us. Make them sorry. So that we're living in a world where after a certain age, you're really not supposed to be contributing. Everything is you're taking. And this is so different from your life. And so to me, I'm looking at the two of you as role models. And
Thank you.
What you do is not, and I'll be saying that. But what you do is not easy. Not everybody knows exactly what their purpose is, what their charity is. One of the interesting things about you is that you've made a huge impact locally. And it's also come from something that happened to you in your life. So you really have a life purpose here. So I'm going to be asking you questions of why did you pick this? You could have volunteered anywhere. You could have contributed anywhere. So what was it for you that made this important? And I'm going to ask you both that separately because I want people to see where it has to come from to be this impactful. All right? Now we have four segments. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that's tough for you guys is at the end of every segment there's music. It goes to a commercial, but you don't hear the music. I know when it's coming. So it might sound like I'm cutting you off a little bit, but that's because I have to get off so that you don't get cut off. All right. So mm-hmm. if you hear me talk a long time, it's because of that. Most of the even though I talk a lot now, I don't talk very much on the show. It's really your show. The second thing, of course, is I do want to talk about money. We talk about money and how to know and monitor what you're contributing because people, they do donor funds, they do all kinds of things. So there'll be one section where we talk about the activity that you do to make sure that things that you're contributing are going toward what you want. And then, of course, even before that, we're going to talk about what it does for you. I think it's very important that people realize that giving is getting. We try to say that, and I feel that's probably very true for the two of you. And we'll talk mm-hmm. about next steps, what you would want to do next. Now, those are the things I want to cover. It's plenty. We don't really need to. But anything that you want to promote, you can promote your organization. You can promote anything that else that you're thinking about. Is there something at the moment, during each little section, we have a minute for you to reflect and say, you know what, I didn't say this. I want to say that the next time we go back on the air. So don't worry about that. But is there anything right now that, Carol, you would like to make sure gets out during this show? Then I'll ask George.
I think first of all, we don't like talking about the numbers of the gifts. We don't need to tell how much money. Good.
Right.
Good.
We will not be doing
other,
that,
I
but
think,
we're talking more about monitoring, and I call it stewardship.
Good. We do too.
That's a key word
we
with us,
too.
Adrian.
Right. Well, you have to know that for 35 years I was a trust and estates lawyer. So I'm completely into this. I'm completely working with charitable trusts and everything else you can think of. So not only do I have the buzzwords, but the audience has the buzzwords too. So don't worry about mm-hmm. that. We will be talking about stewardship. Go ahead, Carol. Continue.
George, I think you should talk about the building, as you have so often, on big shoulders, because the hospital was built by the community, and we must hold it in trust for this community. So, George, would you...
You can cover that, or I can cover it.
No, you could.
I will do that. I'll make sure I ask that question.
Okay.
And George, is there something you particularly want to cover or think Carol should be covering?
Well, I think our view heavily on healthcare and education, especially education, revolves around the old saying, you give a man a fish, you feed him for a day, you teach a man a fish,
okay,
you feed him for life.
Right.
We have
Got
a
it.
Very strong feeling about that.
Okay. So I will not be mentioning this on the show, but if I tell you this, it'll put this interview in context for you guys. Because of my many, many years in the field of trust and estates and charitable giving and this sort of thing, and now that I'm myself somebody who is very interested in a particular organization, I've written many books, but about money, most of them, personal finance. But the one that I'm working on now is called Posterity Now. And that is showing what you're going to be doing that impacts the future while you're still alive. Because in the old days, it was all about what you do in your will, right? Today, it's all about what you're doing while you're here. And so you can see that I'm very involved with the kinds of life engagement that this kind of thing can really do for the person, not just for their organization, all right? So that's my emphasis. Got it?
Got it.
Okay, good. Stuart, we are ready. He's testing the music, and now we have to be quiet for a little while. All right. Okay, first he's going to test the music, and if it comes on, I'm going to hear it. I think you'll hear it, and then we'll be quiet.
When I look in the mirror, I don't see wrinkles. When I look in the mirror, I see hair on my head, not my shoulder.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. The Fountain of Truth about what? Well, the Fountain of Truth about aging. And it's not what you think it is. It's a whole lot better. To prove it, we have with us today Carol and George Bauer. And I'm going to call them blueprints. They are really a blueprint for life engagement, for charitable giving, for what you get when you give, both in your own life engagement and enhancement, and the ability to see the fruits of your labors while you are around to watch. But many of us really want to do this. We find we would like to volunteer. We find we would like to give financial gift giving. We're not really sure how to do this the right way. And they have figured it out. And they're going to give us a piece-by-piece blueprint of how they've done it, what it's done for them, what it can mean for you. And by the way, what it can mean for you, this show now has online, go to generationboldradio.com. GenerationBoldRadio.com, and you will see our player. You'll be able to see about 25 of our past shows. There are hundreds of them. 25 are already archived. But one of them is a analysis of the new SECURE law, which just passed on May 23rd, passed the House, and it is the most sweeping retirement change since 2006. And if nobody's talking about it, and for some reason nobody is, you don't see it in the news, you're going to have to know about it because it's going to change your tax status. It's going to change the meaning of your 401ks and IRAs. It has many provisions for older adults and younger adults. But for older adults, it's an acknowledgement that we're living longer, living stronger, and that we need more money to cover our lifespan. Okay, so take a look at GenerationBoldRadio.com for a complete one-hour analysis of the impact of the new law, SECURE. That's what it's called, on you. So right now I want to thank, first of all, Carol and George Bauer for being with us. Thank you so much, guys.
You're welcome. Our pleasure.
Yeah, this is going to be cool. So let's start with Carol, first of all. I think you have to describe a little bit about the organization that you're so devoted to and why. What generated all this energy and effort toward the Norfolk Hospital Foundation for you, guys, for you particularly, Carol?
Well, we happened to be living in France some time ago with IBM, and I met a woman who was there visiting, and in a walk through the park where we lived, I said to her, "What do you do in the States?" And she said, "I'm director of volunteers for Norwalk Hospital." And I said, "Well, when we get back stateside, if we're close by, I would love to do that." So in 1978, I decided to go look into it, and I fell in love with the organization because minute for minute, day after day, you feel you're making a contribution. Sitting, talking to people who come in there, and either they have a family member who's a patient or they themselves are going through something, and to sit and listen. A lot of people don't do that today, just listen to another person. And I started out in the gift shop and then worked for 25 years in the emergency room, the volunteer waiting lounge, which I started, and then moved into being president of the volunteer organization. And at that point, the volunteer president sits on the board of trustees. And while I was there, I made some contributions. I was the only woman at the time. And because of that, they honored me by asking me to stay on the board. And I did that, became chairman for 6 years. And while I was chairman, I insisted on continuing to volunteer because I've always said a good board member can't make good decisions on a board in a boardroom if it's not out and around and know what the organization does, meet the people. So
here we
have been there
for how long? As of right now,
40 years.
Right. So let's unpack this. Let's unpack this for a moment, and then we'll go on to ask George the same question because we're talking about a blueprint here. First of all, for those of you who have not found their space yet when it comes to volunteering. Notice how random this was. You're in France, you're meeting somebody for the first time, they give you an idea. This is normal. I was looking at something called Match.com for volunteers, not for dating, but it's called VolunteerMatch.com, Carol, because I wanted to give my time to older adults. But I didn't find that. I found something called Good Grief, which is for children who lost their parents early in life. And it's been 6 years. So keep your antenna up. This is what I'm trying to tell my audience. Keep your antenna up for something that touches you. Or you can go online to a volunteermatch.com and browse, but don't be surprised if what you get involved with is nothing that you anticipated in the first place. And then notice that it's a process. It's a process of beginning to volunteer. It's a process of becoming devoted. Then it's a process of going up in the volunteer ladder, and in Carol's case, being on the board. Now, George, did you have a different experience with this? I'm curious to know.
Well, let's stick with the hospital for a moment. Carol, she should have concluded that after she was chairman of the board and moved on to another activity, while she was chairman, she encouraged and actually set up the spiritual care department in Norwalk Hospital. And she wanted to stay involved with the hospital, so she took 4 units of training to become a chaplain and has, for the last 10 or 12 years, been a chaplain in this very same hospital, carrying on what began 45 years ago. My association with the hospital started almost on the back of Carol's experience. I had just retired after 31 years from IBM and was about to get started in a new career, and I had a lot of experience in organizations and how they should operate perhaps better, and there was a study done by Ian Y at Norwalk Hospital, and Carol in one of the board meetings said she had a husband who had a few hours of time on his hand, and rather than hire another consultant to implement.
She volunteered you, I see.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, right. She's a big volunteer all around, so... She suggested that I come in and help implement that E&Y study to try to help the hospital operate better, which indeed I did. And then I fell in love with the institution went on the board as well and was the chairman for a number of years. So that was the beginning of my experience with Norwalk Hospital.
Now, you know, again, it is typical. Now, you know, if you look at Carol and George Bauer, you'll say, no, they're extraordinary. Why are you saying that they're typical? Well, extraordinary people do things in similar ways to each other. They actually do. And if we're going to be extraordinary and we're going to make a contribution that's going to make a lasting difference, we have to model. We have to look at the folks like Carol and George Bauer, which is why I want them on the show. And you would be surprised to know that what they're saying is exactly my experience and the experience of most others. The little organization that I'm working with is expanding into much poorer areas where poverty is an issue along with loss of a parent. And guess what? I just co-opted my husband. It happens all the time. You don't always have a husband handy as a resource, but you can have a friend or another relative, and this is another thing that happens. It becomes something that you do with others. Once you become so passionate about it, it becomes very easy to get other people to get involved as well. So we find that over and over again. Now let me go back to Carol. The interesting thing that I get, Carol, from my listeners is we tried to volunteer, and they put us, you know, somewhere in a back room with licking an envelope. But you started in the gift shop, you say. Did you care how you were treated? Did you change how you were treated? Or were they already very good at treating volunteers?
No, they came after me. The director felt that she needed someone in the intensive care waiting lounge and asked if I would come and serve in that area, which I did. And then eventually realized that in volunteering in the emergency room, we needed a same kind of waiting lounge where a volunteer would meet someone coming in the door, or grab a wheelchair, or whatever, because that's the window to the community. So we did a pilot study. I went over early in the morning for a week to see when most people came. Well, that's not necessary, because in an emergency room, there's no way. You kind of know that Monday night's a busy time, the weekends are busy times. But other than that,
Carol,
you just want someone there.
We're going to have to toss over to commercial right now. We come back. I want to continue this idea of what the organizations ought to be doing and your view of how to enhance volunteer experience, because we've been talking to our audience today with volunteers. There's a lot of people in the profession, the nonprofits listening too. We want to hear how you can enhance the volunteer experience. Give the devotion that Carol and George have. We'll be back. Okay, so now you see how it goes. It gets a little bit easier, okay? And this time I'm going to start with George, because you did make some changes in the organization. But what we do find is a lot of people try to volunteer, and they stop very quickly. And the reason they stop very quickly is they're very disappointed with the experience. So is it all right to ask you some of the things that you would counsel nonprofits to do? So because you've met you.
I don't mind picking up that, Adrian, because I'm a great believer in we develop skill sets in our earlier careers, and nonprofits are in such great need of many of those skill sets that it's a great way to apply your talent to volunteering.
Right. So we want to talk about that. And then I think we will talk about the big shoulders, too. Okay, we're ready. We're ready.
Think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello once again. This is Adrian Berg, and this is the Fountain of Truth, Generation Bold. So a couple of housekeeping details. As you know, we have our shows archived and a special performance, so to speak, an analysis of the new secure law on retirement, and you find that on GenerationBoldRadio.com. But I also want to direct you to our blog. It's really, really, really expanding. The wonderful publishing house, Bottom Line Personal, the largest how-to newsletter in the country, is publishing Aging for Beginners. And it's not all for people over a certain age. A lot of it is really for the understanding of younger folks that we're all aging. And take a look at that, because many of the articles are really important for you if you're in your 20s, your 30s, and more. So that is Aging for Beginners, quite important. And the other thing, finally, that I do want to bring out is an organization. It is not new, but fairly new. It's called Gen2Gen. G-E-N-2, the number 2, G-E-N, generation to generation. And I'm a part of that now, and I would like you to be a part of it as well. So just go to gen2gen.org. Now, we're talking today with Carol and George Bauer, and they are volunteers, but they are volunteers on steroids. They really have, for almost 40 years, informed their own lives and made differences in the lives of many, many others, the Norfolk Hospital in Connecticut, the foundation, and so on. But I used to have a show, George, called Not-for-Profit Exchange. It was a radio show, and it was a niche radio show. It was just nonprofit. Mostly directors would listen. And my co-host, Pat Bowes, was and is a very, very major force in training directors how to treat their volunteers. And Georgia Carroll, I have to tell you, when I first met her, I said, what? They don't treat the volunteers right? They need so many. She says, nope, they don't. So, George, you know, you're somebody who, this organization is able to sustain your interest and your input. What did they do? What did it mean to you that the way they treated you at first as a volunteer? And what would you say to other nonprofits?
Yeah, well, I think all of us beginning our career and working through the first part of our lives gain a set of insights and gain a set of experiences that we need to apply later in life after we mature some and fine-tune those. And so I think in my case, I had been doing some work in IBM, and the hospital needed that kind of skill set. And I was delighted to join that effort. And I think it's part of the answer to the point you were raising before. How do you keep people interested? All of us have gifts. All of us have passions. If the volunteer folks can match those passions and those gifts with activities in their nonprofit organizations, I think therein lies the opportunity to keep people interested.
You know, Carol, when you said they went after me, meaning that the administration had a place for you, you gave me an impression that you were treated, I won't say like staff, but like somebody who was part of the organization, not like a volunteer, but you're on the same level. Is that true across the board at Norfolk? Is that something special you've discovered? I'm sure you have other friends that volunteer elsewhere. Where do they see the pain points and the great points in terms of being a volunteer and how they're treated by the nonprofits?
I think it's because the volunteers report to certain people, to managers in the hospital. And when the manager senses that this volunteer is, it's not a good fit, they would suggest, or she would, she or he would request, may I look into something else? And when they sign up to be a volunteer, they list after an orientation of hearing all of the opportunities, they list three, and then they could move to the next one. And the director of volunteers has been there many years and is just so good at placing people and saying, don't worry, try this first job for 3 months. And if it's not satisfying or something you want to do, please come back to our office, we'll have another interview and talk. Then the director relates to the manager and where the person has been working, and they find a good fit. one of the things I think that's so important is that the volunteer feels that his, her expertise is really being used, and that those, the time of the day that the volunteer is there is really necessary, and the person feels like that it's necessary. We have so many men now who are retired who come and volunteer, many of them in our transport area, some in other areas in the hospital. But there's a real camaraderie. Even our president is a man now. It wasn't for many years, but the men have a great camaraderie. They have new friends. They often go out together maybe in the evening or have lunch together. And it's such a gift to people who have recently retired, both women and men. And I think that the volunteer must feel, and I feel we do a good job of that, feel that the time we're there is crucial and very much needed.
You know, I'm going to ask this question of George. It sounds like I should be asking you, Carol, but I have something else going on that, as I'm listening to you and also reading your background. Because I look at everything through the lens of aging, I rarely look at it through the lens of gender. But Carol was the first woman on the board. But I'm going to ask George, one of the issues of aging is that men are not as engaged after they retire as women are. It is one of the reasons that bioscientists say men actually die a little bit earlier than women. It's getting closer, but it's still the case. They just don't get that life engagement. Now, Carol is talking about all the men volunteer, and I keep seeing initiatives to get women to volunteer. Now that I think about it, now that I'm really listening to you guys, is it because the life skills are being used so that it's an extension of what you learned, or is there something different that's attracting the men to this organization as volunteers?
Well, I think it's two things. One spent all this time honing all of these skills in one's career, and to just give that up seems to be a terrible waste of talent and of good action. So it seems to me that one of the great things about carrying on either with the same career in a different form or another career is you keep active. I think on the question of aging, intellectual and physical activity are fundamental. And if you're not challenged each day, either as a volunteer or as a person in a for-profit organization, if not intellectually challenged, you tend to lose your ability to creatively think. And furthermore, if you're not moving around, if you're not in meetings, if you're not interacting with other people, and you're just sitting reading the Wall Street Journal or occasionally playing around.
Isolation kills. We will be right back. And then I have a surprise for everybody.
And I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Okay, now we have an editor, and so anything that went over the music, don't worry about. Okay, so we're off, and we're going to be coming back on.
Adrian, it's Norwalk. Norwalk Hospital, not Norfolk.
Oh, okay. Okay, very good.
Norwalk.
I apologize for that, and I will fix that. And,
okay.
In fact, that's what I want to talk about next. I want to ask you just about Norwalk and what they're doing, and, you know, you could promote them a little bit. And if there's any websites that anybody should take a look at, is there anything that
they could go online?
Okay,
oh,
good.
Okay.
So, do you have their website, or just
it would be the Norwalk Hospital .com, I would assume, and there's a whole page, and they can then choose from the menu and go to other things.
Very, very good. Now,
or we're part of West. Mm-hmm.
No, go ahead. Oh, you go ahead.
We're part of
we're
Western
off, yeah,
Connecticut
no.
Health Network. And that
very
also
good.
Would have information.
I'm going to ask you about that. I'm going to start with that. Now, in the press release that I have, it has your age. I don't know if it has George's age, to be honest with you. But it does have your.
Yeah, I'm 88. I'm older than she is.
So can I tell people?
Sure.
Of course. Of course.
Okay.
Sure.
Good.
As I was saying at the end of the last segment, I think the clue to keeping going after the traditional age of 65 or thereabouts is keeping active physically and intellectually.
Okay, so we're ready for that, and I'm going to say something about that, and then I'm going to start with Carol, though, just to give a little bit about Norwalk and have people be able to find it. Go ahead, Sven.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy, and I freely admit I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, 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 this is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And we had a wonderful occasion yesterday evening. It's an occasion that you guys have been reading about for a long time in my blog, Aging for Beginners. You know that I've had some difficulty finding the right words for memorial for my mom, and I have discovered, by the way, that one wonderful way to bind with a volunteer organization is to create a memorial, giving them a donation, of course, something lasting for the people that you love. But it's been taking me 10 years to find the right words to put on the plaque. Well, we finally found the right words. The article about how I did that, because many of you are grappling with that, is on Aging for Beginners, our blog. And yesterday was the dedication ceremony. So it did happen, and it can happen, and we were very excited about that over at the Whittemore Preserve, which is a nature preserve. All right, now, I told you I was going to give you a little surprise. Well, the little surprise is age. You've been listening to Carol Bauer, and I know that all of you now know how to voice age, because we've been talking about that for about 4 years. And we know that the younger the voice, the younger the body, regardless of the chronologic age. Well, here's your surprise. Carol Bauer is 86, and George Bauer is 88.
No, 87.
87. Everybody's falling off their chair now, because they know. They know you're not. You may be chronologically, but you're not biologically or cognitively that age. You're much, much, much younger. And let's go over to George for a moment. Well, first, I want everybody to know my faux pas number 367. It is the Norwalk Hospital Foundation that we're talking about, and Norwalk Hospital in the great state of Connecticut. So, Carol, how can they find some information? What should they be Googling or looking at if they are in the area and they want to volunteer or they want to know more about the hospital?
They could go online and go to, we now are part of a system, which is Western Connecticut Health Network. And then if they go on that, which would be either norwalkhospital.com or Western Connecticut Health Network, there's a whole menu of items, and they can click on volunteer opportunities, history, whatever they would like, and a contact number. So I would recommend, and the volunteer director's number is there. I can give it to you if you wish, but it would be on that online.
That's wonderful, and we will always have that available for anybody who is on our mailing list. If you go on to generationboldradio.com, you can put your email in, and we send you notifications of new programs that are coming out, things that we're doing that are not going to be on the air, but we have archived them and put them into podcasts. And if you are looking for information about Norwalk and you've lost it, you can't find it, you can always ask us. Just go on generationboldradio.com. All right. So let's go back to George for a moment. Look, when I was dealing with people who were basically philanthropists, because in my life as a trust and estates attorney, they were coming in to create their own trusts, and they had substantial dollars. you would never ever hear them talk about what they were giving. You would only hear them talk about what they were getting. They were so excited about working with whatever organization they had targeted as the one closest to their heart. So let's talk about that, George. For your own self, it's been very clear. You've said it gives me stimulation. I haven't wasted my skills. It gives me some cognitive energy. In terms of all that, is there anything that you could even think of that would be a substitute that would be so sustainable? I think it's just so terrific to make people understand how much you get out of this.
Yeah, and one of the philosophies we follow is we don't just write checks. We write checks to organizations that we're deeply involved with. And I think that's the clue that philanthropy, many people associate with writing checks. Philanthropy really comes from a couple of words meaning love and humanity. Put together mean love of humanity. And so it isn't just what you give in terms of money. Those of us who have been successful have more of that to give than perhaps others. But it really means giving a part of yourself. There's a broad new thought pattern called steward leadership, and that is that we're all sort of leaders who have stewardship responsibility for our assets, but also stewardship responsibilities for our gifts. And so we tend to think in both those terms as we think about giving away our money. And so philanthropy isn't just for those folks who have been successful monetarily in this life. It's for everyone.
And, you know, I want to emphasize this a lot. Many years ago, I wrote a book called How Good Guys Grow Rich. And it was co-written, one of the few books I've co-written, with a fellow named Milton Gralla, who has passed. And he was he had his own foundation after he sold his business for quite a bit of money. And he was very angry at the title. He hated that title because it was created by our publisher, who insisted on it. He wanted the title to be Good Guys Finish First. It had nothing to do with the money for him. It had to do with his, by the way, you will both know him, not by name, but he was one of the first to create the idea of the matching fund, where if you gave money, somebody else gave money as well, and you would match their gift. It's a very big deal in the field of volunteerism and fundraising. You can imagine to have an idea like that at a time today. We all know about the matching gifts, but not always. So for him, it was all about giving his time. He, as you, did not believe, and this is what I want to bring out as a blueprint to people listening, he did not believe in giving his money if he wasn't giving his time, because he felt he really couldn't see the value of what he was doing unless he was in the trenches. And I want to go back to Carol now about that. You were on the board, but you said, hey, but, you know, I continued to volunteer. I'd like you to explain that a little bit further as to why you thought that was important, why you couldn't do your job unless you were in the trenches.
Well, I felt that if the board is making some very strategic decisions, how can I, as the chairman or even a good board member, make those decisions without walking around and getting to know the organization? And I teased our board members one time. I said, we're going to take a tour. Many of our board members were from New York and other places. Wonderful board. But I said, I'm not sure you would find your way around the hospital if we don't take a tour and let you see what's going on here. And it was very, very much appreciated, because they could see the things, and it affected then our decisions on the board. Well, why don't we have such and such in that department, that piece of equipment, and why don't we do this? And it just opened the eyes of the board, and I think it is so essential.
Now, you know, you are still around the clock in the neonatal intensive care unit. Are you still active there? That you're fitting into your life still today?
I wear a pager 24/7, Adrian, and My main ministry there is to welcome, of course, parents, new babies, and that's the, as my granddaughter would say, the funner part of the job. But
okay.
I get paged any time of the day or night if there's a child who is in the emergency room, or mainly if a parent has been told before even the baby is born, there's no heartbeat. And I'm called to go in immediately. I have an associate also who helps me. But she or I will go in immediately, meet the couple or meet the mother, and be with them. And there's really nothing one can say when a young mother hears that kind of news. We lost our first child, and I remember so vividly after we were told, and he was a week old, told that he had died during the night of a very rare thing. He was healthy while we had him. But I would never say to the mother, I know how you feel, but there's some empathy inside of me that I know I need to be there. No one was there for us at the time. And this was many years ago out in St. Louis. But I am there, and I'll say, I wish I could fix this, but I'm here for the journey. And I will check on the mom every couple of hours. It can take sometimes 2 days for that mother to deliver.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about the fact that you have to search your own soul as to what you feel is the contribution you need to make in this world. We'll be right back. For my age. Da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Okay, so I couldn't believe it, but we're on our last segment. And I know what I want to bring out, but I just want to make sure that the two of you have an opportunity to say anything else that you would like and make sure that that you've brought out what you're hoping to do.
I think one thing is the extension of when one's volunteering in an organization like that, you see, it's like going down one road and seeing so many other things go off of it. We were very involved with the I Have a Dream program in Norwalk because we saw the needs of families whose children were in the villages and could not go to school, so we began mentoring them. I think that's a very important program. We're still now involved with the second grader and third graders who are now getting their master's degrees. And so we've been at that for a long, long time. AmeriCares is another. These things all had opened up through my contact at Norwalk Hospital.
Perfect.
AmeriCares
I
coming
know.
After me. So
it's
Wait,
on your
I'm
point,
going.
Adrian, that you have
yeah.
to be sensitive as you live your life to needs that come up almost randomly.
Very good. So what we're going to do is I can get both of those in, no problem. Stuart, you can go ahead with the music. You'll see how I position this, okay? This
okay.
is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
You may think that I'm full of it, but that doesn't bother me, not even a bit, because I am happy. I'm inappropriate for my age. Da, 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 da.
And hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is Generation Bold, the Fountain of Truth. And this is the most inspirational of our shows that we've had for a long time, because what you're seeing is how it's really done. The minutia of having a life purpose, of being a volunteer, of growing the organization that you're in, not just volunteering in it and letting other people grow it, but you're growing it, whether you give funds to it or not, and making a life of volunteerism that makes a difference. I always say the world is not counting on us after a certain age. Make them sorry. Well, Carol Bauer and George Bauer made them sorry, and they are being sought after. Now, let's go to Carol for a moment. You've said that just volunteering at Norwalk and becoming, you know, so strong on the board and chairman and so on, it's kind of made you a celebrity. in the world of nonprofits, and you have selected some other ones that you want to tell people about because you're very passionate about other causes as well. Let us know about that.
Well, the McCauleys, who founded AmeriCares, were good friends through socially, through our us, and Mrs. McCauley had come after to me when I was a chairman, and she said, you know, we really need you on our AmeriCares board. The board was just beginning to take form. They're now, AmeriCares is now celebrating their 40th anniversary. But I said, I couldn't do it, Lila, while I'm chairman of the hospital board. It's too, I wouldn't have the time. So the day I stepped down, the phone rang, and she said, okay, I'm still here.
Okay.
So I have now served on the AmeriCares board for also about 17, 18 years, oh, longer than that. And it's been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity. AmeriCares is a large humanitarian organization, and they're now in more than 160 countries. They are first on the ground in many cases when there's any kind of an emergency around the world. So I am still involved with that. Barbara Bush was our honorary chairman for many years, and it opened up again another whole group of people and group of just opportunities. We were involved with El Salvador in the opening of their clinic. Now there are four Connecticut free clinics. And just to be involved in that while I was chairman, we were able to start our help put volunteer doctors and nurses over at the Norwalk free clinic. And so it's the things that open up through the volunteer family, if you will. The same was the I Have a Dream program. We had been somewhat involved out in Chicago, but when we moved here, we could see these families coming in, and we decided to start our own program in Norwalk. We started with 43 children. Many of them would not honor the discipline of coming after school, but 26 we ended up with after they graduated from high school. They had to come every day. We would mentor them. We did a summer program with them. Gave them breakfast and lunch and all kinds of activities, tennis and field trips. The Maritime Center was very involved with us. And it's just like, what can I say, stirring a big pot with more things being thrown in the time. And these opportunities open up. They just open up for you if your eyes are open. And I think of our retired men, who would be home. Women are so much better socializing and going out with the girls for lunch. The men are not. And this opened up a whole new opportunity. Friends, see, they get up, they get dressed, they get out. And it's what it does, it just raises the spirit of people. And I'll say one last thing. My mother lived to 106. And she said, Carol, don't look at the numbers. Don't look at how old you are. Just keep going and giving. She said, people get in their 50s and, oh, it's awful to get old. She said, I never want to hear the word old in our home. And God bless her. She lived and was very active. She lived to 106, taught in a church school till she was 100. So I get a lot of that inspiration from my family, as does George.
And you know, let's be silent for a moment, just for a second, and think of your own self, and how much you could do, and what a waste it is for the world not to see it. Make them see it. So let's finish with George. You said, you know, you have to open and be very open to the random things that may come into your life and take advantage of them, particularly in the area of giving. Just take us home, so to speak, with that part of your life and how your antenna is always up for where you could give.
Yeah, I think, Adrian, many listeners are perhaps men who've been in the business world or entrepreneurial world, and their whole life revolves around being sensitive to new products or new services that might become business opportunities and have a welcome market. I think exactly the same thing is true in the world of volunteering, you simply have to keep your antenna up. You have to be sensitive to where the needs are, and then trying to match those needs with your skill set and find a place, and it's where you can feel comfortable, as Carol said, feel a sense of community with others of like mind. And that seems to me to be the clue to finding meaningful activity after many people say you should retire. People often say to Carol and me, when are you going to retire and do something you enjoy? And we laugh up a storm. We say, my, oh, my, there's nothing we could think about doing that would give us more joy and satisfaction than what we do now. So it's terribly important, I think, to be sensitive to potential needs as you move through not your retirement years, your later, more mature years.
Yes. And so I want everyone to go away with this this inspiration from Carol Bauer and George Bauer, and to take a look at Norwalk. I mean, this is one of their important things in their life. I think that if you're local, you'll certainly be able to volunteer. This may be something that touches you. But what's most important here is volunteerism is not a substitute for anything. Volunteerism is the thing. And it is just as fulfilling, rewarding, and life-changing for others and yourself as any career could be. So just because you have left your traditional career or work does not mean that you're not making the biggest contribution of your life. So get out there, kids, and make it happen. Okay. We did it.
Thank you.
That was wonderful, a lot of fun.
Well, it was for us, and to get to know you and what you're doing. Oh my goodness, it's wonderful. It's just an inspiration to know that you're there, and we didn't know about this program, and it's really excellent to have that kind of encouragement for people our age.
Well, I'll tell you, the show is expanding. It's now a podcast, too. I always get the pushback. There's a big company called Podcast One, and they have 8,000 shows. And I said, well, why don't you have this show? Oh, no, older adults don't, you know, listen to these things. So believe me, I have my uphill battle, too. But
I'm sure.
But we're working on this expanding all the time.
Good.
Now, Adrian, are you still practicing law and estate law?
No. I'll tell you what I do. I practiced law from 1972 until the early 2000s. I was 55 when I actually retired, partially because I was able to. And
yeah.
I started the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys for the American Bar Association, so I was very involved. But I actually went and I took a 3-day self-actualization course of what I wanted to do next with my life. And I came up with, after a lot of soul searching, that I wanted everybody to have a wonderful old age. And that was because my father died when I was very young. And I saw my mother, who passed away at 92, was not having such a great old age. And I devoted myself to that. I'm 71. I'll be 71
okay, good
in September.
For you.
And what happened was, it became a second career, an actual paid career. I'm a consultant to a lot of companies that seek the boomer, the caregiver, the markets, and so on. So I actually do both consult, and then I have what I call my babies, the radio show and the blog, to get that word out. And it's really, really resonating. The fastest growing demographic, you guys, is age 85 plus. Yep, 85 plus, fastest growing demographic. So it's been a ride. It's definitely been a ride.
Well,
I want
congratulations.
To tell you thank you. Well, I want to tell you on the side that Good Grief, the organization that I'm so devoted to, has a childhood loss group. And when you said there was nobody there for you, I know just what you mean, because when my father died, there was nobody there for us. And there was no such thing, as childhood grief. Now, that's 60 years ago. But you should feel good to know that there is now something, child loss grief organization also. So it's terrific.
That's great.
Thank you so much. Go. I know you're busy.
Thank you. And thank you for contacting us. We're delighted to participate.
That's wonderful. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right.
And keep
you
up the good
Bye-bye.
Work.
Right. Oh, we'll try.